Greetings, salutations, and welcome to the Planestalkers Podcast, a show by casuals for casuals. I am your host, Will Benson, joined as always by my, hey, I kicked your butt last night in Magic, but that's because I'm better at this than you, co-host Aramis Perez. Aramis, how are you tonight, sir?
That is right. I think there was a point about four games in a row you did maybe a total of one damage?
No, I did get a shot in. I think there was like a 10 shot.
One whole shot.
So... yeah, that was a night and a half, and let's go ahead and get right into it. Untap a keep and draw. Okay, well, boy, we got some information from our sponsor tonight, as we like to do. Before we start every show, we want to remind you guys that this episode and every episode of the Planestalkers Podcast is brought to you by Kerwin's Game Store. Kerwin's Game Store is New York State's premier source for collectible card games, tabletop games, miniatures, comic books, retro video games, and toys. With their clean, open gaming areas available to everyone at no charge, you know, when we're able to open, Kerwin's provides a fun and inviting atmosphere for new and experienced gamers alike. They have locations in both Catskill and Poughkeepsie, New York. The Poughkeepsie one's in the second floor of the Poughkeepsie Galleria. Kerwin's is absolutely the best place in gaming, and they actually now, they just launched last week, a streamlined website, and it's very easy to use. I really like it. It's very well done. You can now find them at www.kgsonline.com. That's KGSonline.com. And guys, don't forget, you can get 5% off any online order when you use the promo code PlanesTalkers2020. It's a new code. So PlanesTalkers2020 will get you 5% off when you go to KGSonline.com. I want to thank Steve. We're going to get him in here for an interview. I was hoping to do it this week, but I think it's going to end up being next week. We may even just record it and pop it in. But I want to talk to him about the state of gaming from the owner's perspective. So we're looking to get that done very soon. Likewise, before we go any further, I do also want to remind you guys and thank you, to send a big thank you out to our Planeswalker level patrons, Ian, Walter, George, Josh, and Zach, who really helped the show in very, very many ways. I've let the guys know who won what. Ian is aware, and you guys are going to get together at some point and put some things together. We've drawn our events, so like I said, Ian and I think George won the Play My Deck. He hasn't sent us a list yet. We got to wait on that. But I'm very excited about that. If you want to get into these drawings, guys, go to patreon.com/planestalkers. You can find out more information. We have three different levels to join us, and we really do appreciate all the help you can give us. It keeps the lights on and keeps things going. But Aramis, how the heck are you, my friend?
I am doing great finding all these ad cards and throwing them out.
Oh, yeah, I'm tired of those. Oh, and you know what? This week, though, I will untap. It's a
invisible beer. Oh, God, invisible beer.
So I'm having another Southern Tier 2X IPA. It's a double IPA, Aramis. Oh, God. This show's going off the rails, my friend.
We had, like, what, a nice 2 weeks where it sort of kind of stayed in the rails? Oh, boy, yeah, here we go.
So paper. How have you been, man?
I've been doing good. Just got my pre-order from Kerwin's this afternoon. So I've cracked open one box. I'm sorting through it
as we
speak a little bit. And
wow, way to be focused on the show, man. Way to that's professional right there.
Says the person who's downing a double IPA.
Hey. That's a part of the show now, man. There are people that write us letters about the beer and give us recommendations. Don't be like that.
Dismissed.
I love our audience.
But I'm doing good. Doing good. You know, like I said, I got my boxes. Can't wait to crack them. I'm gonna save some because so we can do another one of those lovely sealed events that we did last night.
Let me just tell you guys, that was, if you missed that, it is up on our Twitch page now. It is up on our YouTube. We're gonna try to like simulcast whenever we do anything. And so it's up on YouTube, Twitch, and it's on our Facebook. We gamed for almost 3 hours last night. Aramis and I did. We got our pre-release packs, and we opened them and basically put together a sealed event real quick. Aramis's deck was built. Mine, I went one way and went another and finally was able to be competitive. It was a really good time. We're going to do it again because we each have a box left over. So I'm going to save 6 packs. You'll save 6 packs. It's really hard not to open the packs, man.
Super hard not to open
the packs. Just
want
to open the packs.
When I got home from work, but, when I got home from work today, the box was sitting on my kitchen table. And as I was eating dinner, I'm just staring at it going, I want to crack those packs. I want to open. Can I just touch the box, please? And my wife is like, no, you have to do the dishes first. Like, God fine. Okay. Please. I felt like a kid that just got a new video game, but the parents say you have to do your homework first before you can play. And you're like, just sitting there trying to concentrate on the homework, but you're like, oh my God, it's right there. I can see it. Ugh.
It was epic. It was fun. We're going to do it again, maybe Wednesday night, Thursday night. You know, and we're also going to do other formats. Like, I'm going to play Commander. I was like, listen, I bought one of the new Commander decks, so I'm itching to play it. And so, I mean, hey, dude, you know, you can go to Kerwin's Game Store on your way home from work one day, pick yourself up another Commander. Just saying.
Could. It's not actually on my way home from work, but.
Shh. It's on your way home from work.
Maybe.
So, it's been a really interesting week, man. I mean, we're still at Untap here, so let me give you guys an idea of what we're talking about tonight. We are going to talk about the paper release. The paper release happened on Friday. It was a very, very interesting paper release. We should talk about that in regards to Arena 2 having almost a month. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting how you look at your cards. I can actually tell you a little bit of information on that. We are going to talk about the state of Standard. I think that's going to be a main one topic from now on. Like, you know, just figure that's coming. State of Standard. We're going to talk a little bit about what's the front runner deck right now. What's kind of coming up out of the woodwork. There was a major banning today for Vintage and Legacy. The first time a banning in 20 some odd years. It's definitely worth talking about. It's going to have ripple effects through Standard and Modern too, especially the last paragraph of that banning. We're not sure about combat. We may fall into one. If we don't, that's fine. Then a main two, our Magic 101 topic tonight, is going to be about mulligans.
Everyone's favorite. Specifically everyone's favorite
the
topic.
London Yeah, specifically the London Mulligan. You know, hopefully Mark pops in at some point. He did get his box today as well from Kerwin. So, you know, I'd love to hear what he got on his box. And then we'll close out the show. But, I mean, that's a really – we've got a nice packed show. So let's go ahead and get right into it.
Main phase.
All right, main phase. Okay, so we have a ton of information today. It was weird. Maybe you can agree with me or disagree with me on this. Like releasing Ikoria 4 weeks in Arena before paper. Now, obviously, it's a result of everything happening in the world, the pandemic. It is what it is. It was a strange. I don't want to say anticlimactic, but it was a strange pre-release. Or release, I would say.
Well, I mean, circumstances aside, yeah, I mean, it's everything, honestly, everything about this year has been weird. I mean, we really can't single out the one thing, but yeah, like, I had my boxes shipped to me, which, you know, there's no reason normally for me to do that because Kerwin's is 20 minutes away from my house. It's right down the road. You know, when I picked up my pre-release pack and a bundle that I had bought, Steven was at the store. Him and one other person were the only ones at the store.
Yeah, Justin probably.
It might have been Justin or Josh, one of the two.
Okay.
I had to go. I couldn't go into the store. They Ooh. Opened the side door. They had like a shelf set up right on the other side of the door. And the bag was there. He's like, there you go. And I managed, you know, I was able to talk to Steven for a few minutes. And, you know, he told me a couple of things that were going on in the physical store and stuff about the website that, you know, we may get to talk about later. If not, it's not a huge deal. Needless to say, there's good stuff coming at the store. And yeah, it felt very like drug dealy because I had my mask on and, you know, it's sort of like, here's a side door and the side door. Hey, you got my stuff, man. You got my stuff. And okay, here we go. Thanks, man. Okay, I'm going to go. Bye. And it was all very like, you know, middle of the night.
Stealthy.
Yeah, very stealthy, like fly by night type thing. It was very strange. And then like you said, you know, the fact that the game, the set's been out for a month on Arena. I mean, I guess I'm kind of used to it because it's been released digitally before the paper release anyway, and we already know the cards before paper release anyway. So
yes and no.
Yeah, but
I think the month lead up.
I think if we didn't have the month lead up, it would have been whatever. But yeah, I mean, the metagame's already basically shaking itself out. There's not going to be like that huge price crash if you're someone who looks at like, oh, how much value am I going to get from this box? I think the cards have already pretty much settled where they're going to be, bans notwithstanding.
Well, in a way. No, because in a way, I got my Garudas today, and I took a look at the invoice, and I was like, oh yeah, I paid, because I bought that like 2 weeks into, or a week into the meta, because I wanted to make sure I got it, and I had a feeling it was going to go up. Now, my own fault, obviously, but I paid like $8 a card. Oof. That's $1.20 now. Yeah. Like, there is a certain level of, you know, it's a very interesting, because what happened, I mean, Garuda could have held on if paper was around there. Garuda might have held on till the first event.
Well,
you know,
not I don't.
It is tougher in Arena too.
Yeah, I think the way sets are released now, and I think the way that Arena and MTGO and just the way the internet works now, it's very risky to buy singles immediately after a set drops, unless it's a slam dunk, like something like
unless it's Teferi.
Oko or Uro, you know, something like that. Yeah. Because I mean, Luka wasn't that big of a deal when it you know when it initially came out. It's done pretty well since then. But
hey, one of our patrons.
Things are figured out pretty quickly now. So what I like to do is, you know, I let the metagame settle for a bit, and then I buy some
Steve.
Yeah, drug deal for nerds, exactly. I let the metagame settle before I decide what singles I'm going to buy. Like, I'm going to give it another...
I mean, I'm happy with it. I'm okay with it. I'm going to build a Garuda deck, because you know what? When I play the students, when I go back to school, it'll be a fun deck.
Oh, yeah, you'll kill them.
Oh, yeah, and they're going to be pissed.
You're going to crush them.
And then they're going to be like, well, what I'm doing there is, then when we go, they'll be like, can I play Garuda on Friday Night Magic? Absolutely.
And then they'll get crushed.
Go ahead. Here you go.
You're terrible.
Yeah. Hi, Justin.
You are terrible.
I'm a terrible man. I get it. But, you know, it's been an interesting dynamic and an interesting thing going on there with all of that.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, a Garuda is one thing. I mean, I'm glad I ordered the Rook, because I didn't open one again today. Like, my second box. I'm like, oh my God, this is my second box. And, like, oh wait, now you guys can see that on the other stream. Oh yeah, I gotta remember this stream. I'm glad I ordered him, because, you know, now I'm like, you know, I need it.
Right.
So, it's been a definite, you know, Luka, I should say.
Yeah, Luka.
Luka, not Luka.
Luka, whatever.
It's been an interesting pre-release season. And now that it's out in paper, I mean, the reason I guess it feels anticlimactic is we're not looking at any events. I don't think any are on the calendar yet. I don't think they even have a June
I wouldn't yet. Expect, I honestly wouldn't expect paper events until the end of the year, if then.
Yeah, I think they've already changed the Mythic Championship for this year, or whatever they're calling it, Pro Tour, Player Tour. Mm-hmm. The first Player Tour was paper, and now is Arena.
Which, I mean...
So, they have to do it
that way. And I'll say this. It's a good thing that they have a client that is... I don't want to say stable, but it's a better client for something like this than MTGO.
Yeah. It's almost ready for prime time. I would say.
So, I mean, could you imagine...
Hey, Mike, how are
you?
Could
you imagine what they would be trying to figure out if they didn't have Arena and all this stuff was getting canceled?
Yeah. So, it was a definite interesting paper release. Like I said, I really want to get Steve in here to talk about that. I mean, I picked up some stuff from Bonds myself on Friday. That's where I got my pre-release pack and a box. And, you know, and then I got my two today from Kerwin's. And, you know, I'll open the third one tomorrow. I'm not going to do a video on cracking. I think one's enough. But, you know, and I had, I pulled a foil Loras.
Nice.
So I was like, all right, it's, you know, $12, but...
Well, that might be dropping.
Yeah, I think it's going to drop. So, and I really, you know, and that brings me... Loras does bring me to the state of Standard, you know. Standard has definitely had a bit of an overhaul. Again, to be quite honest, I mean, I keep seeing the whiny crybabies on Reddit. And we love you, please. But, oh my gosh, like, they're crying about how Standard is and how there has to be bans of Agent of Treachery and this, that. Listen, Standard is stable again. Like, it seems like it's gotten back to a little bit more of paper, rock, scissors. Now, there is a, you know, there's a clear-cut front-runner right now. But that doesn't mean the clear-cut front-runner right now is going to be the clear-cut front-runner next week. Somebody will crack the code. You know, it's still beatable. Luka is beatable by going under it, you know, and Mono Red is coming out of the, you know, it's like, so we could talk a little bit about that. You know, Bant Ramp took a hit. Like, it was number one, and Jeskai Fires was number one for a while, and now it's fallen to, like, according to MTG Goldfish, I mean, it's number six.
I have it at number eight.
Or seven. Yeah. So, I mean, it's, you know, like, the big hotness everybody knows is Jeskai Luka, which is basically Luka along with Urien and Agent of Treachery, and Luka bouncing Agent of Treachery. Great tech. Stable as hell. I'm having fun with it. I've been playing best of one, and I was getting beat a ton by cycle decks. I fixed that. First of all, I took out like an Aether Gust, and I took out the Glass Casket, and I threw in and a few of the other stuff. I took out one of the Elspeth Conqueror's Death, and I put in three Ley Lines of the Void, and I threw in a. And I put a Dream Trawler in the main.
What does Leyland of the Void do against cycling?
Go ahead and cycle. It doesn't go to your graveyard.
Oh, so it Solar shuts Flare, off Zenith shut Flare. Off. It shuts off Zenith Flare. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, Zenith Flare, done. And what usually happens is if I get Leyland of the Void, like the minute I see Loras, I will mulligan to Leyland. Because I'm going to be basically like, I'm putting this down now.
Well, you know what's in the...
Would you like to continue the game?
You know what's in the sideboard of Yori and Luka? If you're in best of one, that might help you also against cycling is the Wanderer.
Yeah, I've thought about that too. So, but I've had a lot of fun with the... I'm happy to beat you, but I'd also very much like to... Like, I love the thought of you quitting pre-first card. And it happens more often than not the minute Leyline of the Void comes down. They're just like, nah, fuck it. You know, and they basically go hide. And I'm okay with that. So I've been having fun with that deck, and I'm going to build it in paper. I mean, I've got most of the pieces for it. I've already got my one Urien. I've ordered three Lukas now, so they're on their way. But I have everything else I need for that deck. So I'm like, hello, I'm going to play this.
No reason not to.
Nah, that's just it. I want to play paper again. Like, really what I loved about last night was there is something to having paper and having to remember triggers and having to... There's a mental thing there that happens that doesn't happen in Arena.
Yeah,
Arena remembers all your triggers.
Arena holds your hand.
Yeah, it's... I really loved last night. Just I learned so much just playing with you like that. I might even talk to the listeners, like, you know, heck, I don't, you know, hey, listeners, especially our Planeswalker ones, for the month of June, if you want if you win the deck to play us, play the host, I'd be more than willing to play you guys in paper. Like, it's very easy to do. You need a webcam on your computer and a phone to stream with. I'll make it work. We did it last night, and it worked well for you.
It's not super hard, no.
No. It was weird because your phone, I think, was also on your main account somehow still, because at one point, if you watch the main one, it was funny. On the main feed, at one point you went to the black screen from what you're using for your possible green screen.
Right.
And that was weird. It was about 30, 40 minutes in, or an hour and a half in. Now, on my screen and on the YouTube channel and on Twitch, because what I'm doing is I'm taking this portion here. I have OBS, like, just taking my window.
Right.
Since I didn't see you go there, Twitch and YouTube looked, you were normal. So I was like, but when I went looking at it yesterday, I was like, huh.
I got to take that program off until I'm ready to use it.
Yeah, I think so too. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, it's because it screws with other things on my computer too. So it's like I think.
Ooh, Steven, he's totally down to play a commander game with us.
I'm okay with that.
Multiplayer commander.
I mean, my deck's not tuned at all, but I can play.
Dude, he'll play one of the new ones right out of the box.
I'm okay with that too. Because I have two. I don't have any decks from this year, but I have two decks from last year. So
we can have four people in BeLive at one time. I would do it BeLive. I wouldn't use anything else. Hmm. We could do four people in BeLive, and we just then you would only need one webcam or your phone because you know.
Yeah, because we would be able to do.
We just wouldn't show our faces,
which is fine.
That's all.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, this is.
I'm down with that. I mean, I've been wanting to get into Commander more, so I mean, this gives me an excuse to do that.
Oh, I'm getting ideas, Aramis.
Yes, I'm terrified. I'm terrified.
Yes, be afraid. Be very afraid. Where's the beer?
Be scared. Be very scared.
All right. Oh shit. Oh.
Mm-mm. A little too much, huh?
No, I put it down too fast. I know better. Oh God. Don't you dare. Okay, we did this last night, I think. My wife, with my other podcast, my wife used to take her bottle in college and make me drink fast because she'd pick her bottle and go, boop, on the top of mine, causes it to bubble and foam, and you better drink it before you make a mess. She just tried to do it again. That rat. Okay, never mind. We'll take this out of the podcast. All right, so in any event, state of standard... Companions are ruling the roost.
Yes.
That much is obvious.
Yes.
With the exception of Zenith, of Jeskai Cycling, you know, I think it's pretty much, it's ruling the roost. It's in every deck right now, except Jeskai Cycling in the top five, in the top
no,
ten.
Jeskai Cycling.
Oh, wait, it might even Jeskai be in Jeskai Cycling. Cycling. Lures. Yeah. Yes, it does. So it's in every deck.
Yeah. There's no reason
not to. You cannot play, yeah. It's an eighth card. I mean, okay, if you can make a, you know what, mono red Obosh is a thing, and what a thing.
Oh yeah,
holy shit,
there is no cost whatsoever for putting Obosh in that deck, and it basically says here you go, here's an extra copy of Torbran that you can always have in your hand when you need it.
In fact, they took Torbran out.
Exactly, because it's like, why bother waiting? Why bother having to rely to draw it?
Torbran's even. Yeah, Torbran's even, too. But it's Fervent Champion, Grim Initiate, Scorched Spitter.
One drops for days.
To do this. Yeah. It's ridiculously stupid. And Scorched Spitter starts hitting you for two.
Mm-hmm.
So four every time it attacks.
Oh, yes.
Okay. So, I mean, I'll build that deck, too. But, because, again, I have that deck.
According to this, it's only $34.
Yeah, well, it's Obosh you need, right? Well, Obosh, if it becomes a real deck, Obosh will go up.
I don't think so, because Dream Trawler's always been a thing, and that's still a $2 card.
True. Here's the thing, though. I think the reason the commanders aren't going up, and we'll talk about this in the next thing, is I think they're expecting the Banhammer at some point, or a change in
the mechanic. Well, they're also only rare. It's not like they're mythic.
Yeah.
So there's more of them.
So, I mean, it's just, you know, if you take a look, you know what, I'm going to put this, the YouTube people will see it. You know,
it's a double whammy because they're rare, and for the most part, you only need one.
Right.
You know, so their price is going to be very depressed in that regard, but their power is undeniable.
Exactly. Well, I mean, here's the thing, folks. I'm using mtggoldfish.com. Okay, if you're taking a look at the screen right now, Jeskai Luka uses Yorion. Jeskai Cycling is using Lurrus. Teemer Wreck is using
Karuga.
What the hell is its name there? Karuga. Mono Red Obosh. Bant Ramp uses Yorion. Rakdos Lurrus is using Lurrus. Jeskai Fires is using Karuga. Teemer Elementals is using Yorion. It's like it doesn't until you get down to Teemer Adventures that you see one that doesn't have a companion. Like, holy cow. Like,
yeah.
There is something to. I mean, yeah, we missed the boat. We totally missed the boat on that, you and me. Well, I did. You were like, oh, it's going to warp standard. I'm like,
limited only.
Whoopsie. Wah, wah. But, I mean, it's just, that was just.
A little bit of crow.
I mean, even, you know, exactly what Raphael said. He's like, am I the only one who didn't like Incorian all its companion bullshit? Raphael, you're not wrong.
I like Ikoria. I'm torn on the companions. I like the idea, but I think they... I don't know if they didn't test it properly or if they missed something. It's really hard. You know, I don't want to bash Wizards about this because I understand what they were trying to do. It just didn't work.
Did it not work or did it work?
It worked
too
way
well?
Too well, and that's the problem. I mean, I guess that's a pretty good segue.
It is. So, I mean, we talked about Standard a little bit. Let's go ahead and, you know, we're going to pivot. We're still in main one here. One of the reasons we're talking about this is that the ban list came out today. And not surprisingly, all right, not surprising at all, basically Legacy, well, it's surprising because it hit Vintage and Legacy, which they don't do very
well.
Well,
Legacy, not super surprising. Vintage, surprising in extremely. A certain sense. In a certain sense. And I'll get to that, but go ahead.
Yeah. Well, because you can't... And I understand why you have to ban it, because, you know, restricting it in Vintage...
Doesn't do anything.
Makes no difference. Yeah. It has to be banned. But today, you know, they released their ban list, and it hit three formats, Vintage, Brawl, and Legacy. For Brawl... No brainers, really. Dranith Magistrate was a freaking. Why they haven't banned? I'm surprised they haven't banned it in Commander yet. I guess because there are 1,000 ways to deal with it in Commander. Even if you can't cast your Commander, you can get rid of that card. Hmm. And Winata is. Yes,
that was a little bit of a surprise for me.
Not me. I've played Brawl, and everybody's playing Winata. Hmm. Like everybody was. It was the freaking
big up and coming deck, huh?
Yeah, well, it was the, what do you call it, the five-color artifact dude there that, you know, got banned out of Brawl is, what's his name there? He was part of the...
Oh, yeah, Wandering guy, yeah.
Field of the Dead guy, yeah, yeah. Like, you were seeing it too much. You really were. You either played Winata or you didn't play. And then they talked about Legacy, and Loras, of course, we all knew that was going to happen. Loras was banned. And then Zerda the Dawn Waker...
Yeah.
Which is not a companion we've heard a lot about in Standard. It hasn't really hit much in Standard.
No, but that's because it can't be abused like it can be in Legacy because Grim Monolith. Because
Legacy has so many activated...
Yeah, that plus Grim Monolith is infinite mana.
Yes. So, and Zerda the Dawn Waker, if you don't know, it's a companion. Each permanent card in your starting deck has an activated ability. And then it says abilities you activate that aren't mana abilities cost 2 less to activate. This effect can't reduce the mana to less than 1. So, those make sense. And they kept going. And then we saw something we don't see very often.
Almost.
Loras of the Dream Den is banned in Vintage.
Yeah, almost never. The last time they banned a card in Vintage, the last time there was any cards banned in Vintage that weren't like anti-cards or manual dexterity cards or the conspiracies, 2000. It's been 20 years.
20 years
since they banned a card in Vintage. It's, I mean, like you were saying, Benson, they can't restrict it because it doesn't do anything. But, right. I mean, banning a card in Vintage, it never, ever happened. So this card is more abusable than the Power 9.
Right.
Because they can't restrict this card because it has no effect on what it does. And how...
Well, they even said that. We recognize that it's a rare occurrence to ban a card for balance reasons in Vintage rather than restricting it. But this is a unique case where restricting Loras wouldn't affect its usage as a companion, which is the primary motivation for making this change.
Yeah, because it's land, Lotus, pop, Loras, Lotus, and you still have 4 mana on turn 1 to go absolutely buck nutty.
So, I mean, that's... You know, it wasn't very surprising, but really, the big thing, and we're a Standard podcast, so we're going to talk about Standard here. They told their reasons why, and everybody knew why. You didn't need to be told why. Everybody's seen what's been happening in MTGO with these cards.
If you looked at the top 6 decks in Vintage, they were all Loras decks.
Yeah, so it makes sense. But then they kept going. And, you know, Ian Duke, I love it because I know sometimes I think he's like, all right, we've done it. Let's put this at the end. And so they buried the lead. And I'm going to read you the last paragraph of the ban restricted because that's really where it was important. They said, we are aware of some players' concerns about the frequency at which they encounter decks using companions across several formats. While we're not currently seeing problematic win rates in Standard, Pioneer, or Modern from decks using Companions, we are looking at overall metagame share and potential for repetitive gameplay. If we see signs of long-term health issues resulting from high metagame share of Companion decks, we're willing to take steps up to or including changing how the Companion mechanic works. For now, metagames need more time to evolve before we can determine whether changes are necessary. That is huge.
Yeah, let me repeat that if you missed it. If we see signs of long-term health issues resulting from high metagame shares of Companion decks, we're willing to take steps up to or including changing how the Companion mechanic works. They're talking about power level or Errata. Errata.
Yeah. So, I don't know about you, but knowing that 10 of 12 of the top 12 decks, according to MTG Goldfish, for Standard, having Companions, that seems unbalanced.
Well, you look at a recent Modern event, 87% yep. of the decks were playing Companion.
And that's what's just it. I'm just going to Modern now. And I'm looking there. We've got Loras Jund as the top deck. Burn, using Loras. Don't think Tron is using a companion. Nope, Tron's using Giganta. Eldrazi Tron is using no companion. So number four has no companion. Blue, red, green, they're using Yorion. Simic Wreck, Yorion. Why wouldn't you? Bant Snowblade, Yorion. Amulet Titan, no. Don't need it. It's Amulet Titan. Gruul Obosh is using Obosh. Loras of the Dream Den for Devotus Devastation. Niv to Light is using Giganta.
No surprise there.
And Loras Death Shadow. So again, 9 out of 12 of the Modern metagame is using Companion.
It's Loras and it's Yorion for the most part.
But you can't, I don't think you can nail them without the mechanic.
Yeah.
You have to nail the mechanic. Here's my fear, okay? If you're going to nerf it, then get rid of it. Don't nerf it to where it's like, here's what I don't want. I will not use a companion if it can be thought erasured.
No.
In this current Standard meta, I don't want, the whole point of companion is, if I'm going to restrict my deck to odd numbered stuff, if I'm going to play a mono red deck with Obosh and not get to Torbrand, then I don't want it to be thought erasured.
It's not,
I don't,
if they errata the ability, If they change it, first of all, this is going to be a big deal because they really haven't done this.
It will be a very big deal.
Like the last, it hasn't been that long since they changed something like this. They changed the way Proliferate works with War of the Spark,
right?
But that was like, you know, it was a net positive. It was sort of the way Proliferate was always intended to work. This is changing something because it's wrong and it's broken,
right?
I don't think if they change it, it's going to be something where it ends up in your hand. I think it's going to be, it will be something more along the lines of, if you are playing with a companion, your starting hand is one less card.
And I'd be okay with that. I would be okay with that. So you have six and then this one card out.
Yeah, or okay. Something along those lines. Or there's some other, I can't think of really too many other changes they can make to make this tolerable to the point where people maybe are discouraged from playing it so easily. Because the biggest thing about this is that it's an eighth card, and the deck building restrictions aren't really a restriction for most of these cards. You're like, with Lurus, you're like, okay, play cheap stuff. That's good.
Exactly. Well, and I mean, Loras is it's not just cheap stuff. The problem they had with Loras is permanence. Okay, if they had said all of your cards have to be one or two, including instants and sorceries. You know, if you can't play Zenith Flare with Loras, Loras becomes less of a, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The problem with that was calling it permanence. And I think it also would have shut down Legacy. It wouldn't be played in Vintage and Legacy either. Mm-hmm. Like, it just would have made it different. The problem is they restricted it to creatures or permanents, enchantments, things of that nature, instead of spells. You know, if it had said spells, you cannot have any cards, you know, spells in your library with a greater than 2 mana cast. All right. Now, Loras is not that big of a card.
Well,
it's kind of like Oko. It's kind of like, what the hell were you thinking with two pluses?
And again, this is why I'm so torn about the companion mechanic, because I see what they were trying to do. They were trying to open up a new design space. They were trying to sort of turn Magic on its ear a little bit and say, hey, here's a completely different way you can play. It's sort of like Commander. Not really. Kind of, sort of, because you can do it once. And
I think they were looking for the new Planeswalker. I really do. I think they wanted to see. And they would have took a little while off. And then by the time rotation comes next year, they were going to be like, okay, we're going to run companions in every set. And you'll have two, like you have two Planeswalkers, you'll have two companions in every set.
And they can do that because they none of the companions are mythics. So, you know, they can get away with just making them a bunch of rares. But I don't know. I don't know if it's the fact they're hybrid, so they're easier to play. I don't know if it's the fact that it's just too easy to build with them. But it's just I feel bad because, like I said, I know what they were trying to do. They were trying to make the game, give it some fresh blood, a different way to play. And they so far overshot that the fact that they actually have to basically, this is a giant mea culpa from Wizard saying, oh my God, what have we done? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is worse than Uncle, in my opinion.
Listen, and there are content creators out there, I've listened to a few of them, that are saying things like, Rosewater needs to go now. Like, not, after Oko.
This is not Rosewater.
After the Modern Horizon snafu. And now this. I'm like, no, you don't want your designer to be worried about his job.
His job
is to design. You know, his job is to throw things against the wall. It is your job in the corporate office, and your job in the testing team, and your job in the development team. He's a designer, not the developer. The development team needs to be the ones to say, this doesn't work. You know, like, he needs to be able to say, the designer needs the freedom to be able to say this.
Part of the,
you know, and they're not.
Part of the problem is, and they've acknowledged this, and this is a problem that they've acknowledged it, but at the same time, I can understand it. They primarily test for standard.
Right.
Because there is literally no way a team that small, and they can't make it big enough to be logistically possible, can test one card against 24,000 other cards to make sure that none of them break it. Granted, with Loris, it should have been kind of obvious because low-cost permanents, Vintage really likes their zero-cost artifacts. You know, so there are certain things that were, you know, probably a little bit lower hanging fruit than others that they might have been able to fix with appropriate testing or a little bit of common sense. But I'm not going to put this on Morrow. I'm not going to put this on the playtesting team. I think I could put this at the feet of Hasbro wanting to sell packs. Because look at everybody having to play these cards. To be competitive.
I don't know about that. I understand it. Rosewater said it too. He's like, you know, we need to have some power creep to keep the Eternal formats buying packs. I get that. That's not even Hasbro. That's, all right, if you want Magic to continue, if you want Magic to be viable, then it means that we have to get behind new sets. It's one of the reasons we started this podcast is I believe in standard is important to Magic because it keeps people coming in. And yes, it sucks that in 6 months... or in 3 months now, like, half my collection goes into Amber. And, you know, I put it into a box and pull it out of binders and say, hey,
this is... And you hope and pray that something in Pioneer or Modern pops up where you can use them again.
Right. Because that's just what you can do. That's all you can do. I get it, though. I understand it. That's why, you know, when Teferi got too big, I was glad I had my four. I sold them for the wedding last year. I never got to Fairy Hero Dominaria again. I don't have four of them because I sold them last year for the wedding. The reason was because I'm like, I can't see spending $30, $40, $50 on a standard card. You know, when cards go crazy, you can't go after and chase those cards. When Hydroid Crisis was at the $30 mark, I'm like, oh, God, you know. You have to be aware of that, I guess, is what I'm saying. Now, there are certain cards, you know, the ones that go 30 or 40, yes and no. I mean, Scarab God was up there to 26 at one point. Now it's like $5.
Euro's at about $50 right now.
Yeah. Euro, and I've got four of them.
Yeah, I have one, I think.
Mm-hmm. I did get four. And I ordered them. Like, I knew that. Every set, I kind of look for the one. Like, this time at Garuda, I made a mistake. For the last couple of sets, I was on the Hydroid Crisis bandwagon before a lot of people. I got it really dirt cheap, and then it went up. I'm like, hey, this is great. Euro, same thing. What was it? The Phoenix there that you loved.
Oh,
there.
Rekindling Phoenix.
Rekindling Phoenix. Yeah, I was on that one. So, I mean, you got to kind of pay attention. But you got to realize too, it's like, it's one thing to buy, and it's good. Like, here's the thing. I mean, I've opened 3 boxes. I'm done buying packs. Like, I'll buy packs maybe occasionally at a Walmart. I'll walk through, and if they've got one, sure. What the heck? What if from here on out I buy what I need? Mm-hmm. You know, I will go and get the singles. Because, you know, yeah, and I do have a foil Death Corona. So, yes, but it was an interesting dynamic that we have to think of now.
Yeah. But I wouldn't put this at Morrow's feet.
No, I would say that it's nobody's fault. We have to give the design team its room, and you have to let the devs do what they can. If you're going to lay blame at somebody, if you are going to lay blame on someone, then I'm sorry, you have to lay it not at your designer. You have to lay it at your the devs, because the designer should be able to sit there and go, well, I think we should do this, and the dev should be, you know, looking at it going, what is this going to do to Vintage and Legacy? You don't have to know every deck, but if it's showing up in 12 decks, okay, somebody somewhere, that means somebody somewhere didn't try it with Tron. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, to use it for Modern.
Or Paradoxical, like, Outcome in Vintage.
Right. Like, how do you not try it on the big decks?
And I know part of the problem, too, is that the development team, and when they're designing sets, they're a year plus ahead of us. So they know things that are out there already that don't exist for us yet. So that adds another wrinkle to it. And like I said, it's so hard to test all the possibilities. But again, I mean, it felt like there were some no-brainers that they missed.
Oka was a miss.
I'm talking more of the interaction between Luris and, you know, Power Knight.
Luris, I mean, here's the thing. Luca has nothing to do with Companion. And believe me, if you nerf Companions, that will not make Luca go away. In fact, it will make Luca better. Because, okay, it's nice that Yorian can bounce Agent of Treachery, but you'll just play Thassa, and it does the same thing every turn.
The biggest difference, it would lose some consistency, because you with Yorian, you always have it when you need it.
Yes. Yes, that's
true. That's the big thing.
But that deck is the mechanic on that deck is Luca, Agent of Treachery, and then the token creators. You need your Birth of Miletus. You need Omen of the Sun to create the tokens.
Yeah.
You know, and once you have that, and Castle of Ardenvale, which I'm glad they're using 3 of now. When I first saw this deck, they only had 1. I'm like, no, I want 3 or 4 of those. Like, you need, because the token generation is the key for that. So, I mean, it's just one of those things to think about. You know, I don't know what this means. I don't know. You're probably more right. I really would hate it if they were like, you know, treat it like a mulligan and you swap one of your cards for Yorian and then it gets thought erasure.
I'm really curious. And again, it may not even get this far to the point where they errata it. It may not get to the point where they have to change how the mechanic actually
works. I think they're
going
to have to.
They may have to. And if that does happen, I will be very curious to see what their solution is. I'm glad that they're willing to take this step to an obvious problem. It's sad that it's gotten to this point. And, you know, it's yet another set that things get banned basically right out of the gate.
Right.
It's been almost every. It's been every set since War of the Spark.
Yeah, War of the Spark had one. The Core didn't.
Core had
Veil of Summer and Field of the Dead
and the Nomad.
But that wasn't right out of the gate. That was after some.
Yeah, but it was fairly quickly. I mean, it was still standard legal.
And then what was it? Throne of Eldraine.
Throne of Eldraine. Oko. Once Upon a Time.
I think Theros. They didn't.
Theros had Underworld Breach.
Yeah, that's in Modern. I'm talking Standard.
Well, Standard bans are rare to begin with anyway. They haven't banned anything here in Standard yet either.
They've banned out of this set? No, not out of this current set. Not out of this set. Yeah.
So it's been, but I'm talking bans from brand new sets in a row in general from any format. That's not something that was a normal thing up until about a year ago.
Right. So, you know, and with that, I mean, it's going to be interesting. It's going to, we're going to keep our eye on it for the next couple of weeks. We're going to see what's coming on, see what's happening. Let's go into combat.
Combat phase.
And then before you declare attackers, I read snare, so not quite.
You kind of already had it anyway.
Main phase.
Yes. Yeah. All right, let's get to main two. All right, main two, Magic 101 segment. So this week we want to talk about mulligans.
Yeah.
These are fun. This is a fun topic. And the guys who are watching this, feel free to jump in and let us know your thoughts. What do you think about mulligans, Aaron?
Mulligans are very important. It's a good skill to learn when to do it, how to do it. I'll admit I'm not a master of it. As a control player, you know, there's certain things that you look for in your opening hand that, you know, you sort of want to be able to think a few turns ahead and determine, is this a hand that's going to be playable? Is this something I can keep? Do you know your matchup? So when you draw your opening seven, there's a couple of questions you want to ask yourself before you decide whether or not you keep. You should probably never keep a hand with less than two lands in it, and two lands is usually pretty sketchy. Unless you have a way to generate more, or your deck has such a low curve that you don't need more than two lands, like a mono red deck or a deck with some ramp. And when you're looking at your hand, you want to basically ask yourself, for the first two or three turns, am I going to be able to be playing Magic? Am I going to be actually playing this game, or am I just going to be sitting there praying that I draw something? If the answer to either of those questions is no, you probably want to ship that hand and draw a new one. Luckily, with the London Mulligan, it's not as bad as the, what was it, the Paris Mulligan?
Vancouver
Mulligan. Whereas before, you would just simply draw one fewer card. Nowadays, you still draw seven cards every time you mulligan, but now you pick X cards, where X is the number of times you've mulliganed, and take those from your hand and put them on the bottom of your deck. So you get to pick the best six, five, or four cards, hopefully never four, but you know the best cards in your hand to keep. Why was there a thermometer?
Because I'm playing.
Okay.
Just see it if you're paying attention. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a pretty simple concept. If your hand sucks, throw it back. If you're playing against aggro and you have five lands and 2 6 drops, ship it. You know, if it's going to take you a few turns to actually do anything and you're playing against an aggressive deck, try to see if you can find yourself a hand that's more conducive to being interactive the first few turns of the game. Combo players have a bit of a, you know, their decks are built in a way that they can be a little more aggressive because there's only certain cards that they need. So they can be a little more like, all right, this hand's decent, but I think I can do something better. I'm looking for a specific card. This is also...
And I think that's what the London Mulligan provides. It was really for combo.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and Steve even said in the chat, he's like, he hates the current Mulligan. And that he's like, Scry was better. You know, we should have built on that. I have to disagree. Here's the thing. Now, this is going to seem unusual, but there was a time when you could watch Magic on Twitch. And I mean, you still can, but it's video games again. It's not, they're not doing paper. But I would watch events. And there was nothing more frustrating than watching an event, especially in Modern or Legacy, where they have to mull down. And either keep a shitty hand because, you know, you can't go below five or four and then lose. Like, it just a bunch of non-games, which is what we were seeing with the Vancouver Mulligan. You saw a bunch of non-games. So that's when all of a sudden aggro was king. That's why aggro was king. You were like, I don't care if I have three land in aggro. I'm going to come out of the gate swinging. Now you see more combo decks, and I think that's a direct result of the Mulligan, the London Mulligan. And is it perfect? No, not by any stretch. I miss Scry.
It adds consistency. Some people think it's consistency to a fault because it does It does allow you to keep more hands than you otherwise would with the Vancouver Mulligan because you're not automatically stuck with six or five. You get to sculpt your hand a little more. So it does add to the consistency, but I think it's a net positive where both players have a chance to play the game because there's nothing worse than losing a game because you're literally going, well, I mean, I mulled to three. What am I supposed to do?
Yeah. I mean, it happened last night. The first game we played, I had mulled to five.
And I mean, granted.
So it's not perfect.
Like, mulling to five is still terrible. Mulling to five, yeah. you still put yourself in an enormous hole that, you know, statistically...
Especially if you're playing first.
Yeah, statistically, you may not get out of, but you have a better chance with the London Mulligan mulling to five than you ever did with the Vancouver Mulligan mulling to five, because right. you're stuck with the top five. And plus a scry.
And I'm a... Mm. And I'm a big fan of mulligans. Listen, let me tell you something. There are people afraid of it. And you can see it sometimes when you're playing paper. People will roll their eyes if you mull two or three times. And they get, you know, some people get a little salty at it. Here's the thing. It's part of the game. And it's a very necessary and it's a very integral part of the game. And it's a good part of this game. Mm-hmm. The fact that I can mulligan, that I am not stuck with a one-man in hand. If we were playing something like Yu-Gi-Oh! Or Pokemon where resources weren't as important, okay... But without mana, you're done.
Yep.
This game is your game is over. You do not get one mana a turn. If you had a way to get a mana each turn, then sure, take the mulligan rule.
If you want to do that, then play Hearthstone.
Exactly. Nobody wants that. I don't want to play Hearthstone. So I love the mulligan rule. I love the idea of it. I've been playing Magic since it started, okay? And I've been through... A few of them. I wasn't around when they did the Vancouver Mulligan, but I mean, the early days and all that. I mean, mulliganing is important, and it is important for you to know when to do it. Aramis is absolutely right. If you are playing an aggro deck, okay, you're not going to mull that much. If you have a one or two land hand in paper, if you're playing Arena, never keep a two land hand in Arena.
Oh, God.
Okay. But if you're playing in paper, a one or two land hand and you're playing aggro, okay. You've got turn one, turn two, turn three plays. All right, you have three turns to draw another land.
You just
that's a good number.
You just gave me a flashback of the World Championships where he kept the two lander and then just oh god.
And you wanted to sit there and shake him and be like, "What are you doing?"
Oh man, he just you know, it's like you don't want to be the conspiracy theorist, but it's like I my experience has been you keep a two lander. In Arena, you are not drawing your third land most of the time for a while.
No, not for a while. So, and Steve's here showing us something. GP Denver a few years ago, I won a mull to three in round one against aggro playing hard control. Okay, if you're playing control, you were playing aggro against control? Yeah,
I think he was,
you better win.
He was playing against aggro, and he was the control deck.
I won a mull to three in round one against aggro. Oh, interesting. That's, well, then you probably kept your...
That's extremely...
You
know, but that's what he's saying. Really good top decks. But that's the thing. Is yeah. either you top deck like a champ, or he just ran out of gas so fast. But, I mean,
right.
It's... Mulling down to low numbers, it's just... It's a percentage thing. Your percentage chance of winning the game goes down every time you mulligan. The difference right. between the two mulligan systems that we had most recently is that with this, the London Mulligan, your percentage chance doesn't go down as much. Now, right. I mean, you know, Friday Night Magic and playing at the tabletop, at the kitchen table, you're not worried about percentages as much. So, you know, whatever. But I think, you know, like Will was saying, it's not a perfect system. Maybe there's a better way. I don't know. But the mana system in this game, love it or hate it, is one of the reasons that makes this game so great. Sometimes you win because of it. Sometimes you lose because of it. But it's there.
It's a great equalizer.
It's a very great equalizer. It allows any deck to beat any deck on a certain, you know, right. given it the right draw.
And that's the thing. So, I mean, here's the thing. And you know, he's making it sound like Mulligan. I don't think mulliganing is bad. I think it's skill like anything else. Yeah. And now with the London Mulligan... It's become more skillful. Again, with the Vancouver Mulligan, it was dead draw luck. You drew five cards. You got to scry one, but you drew five cards or six or, you know. So you didn't have to, the decision wasn't on you. Okay. It was on the cards. By moving to the London Mulligan, what it is that it is adding a little more control to you. You are deciding what you're not going to keep. Mm-hmm. You know, if you draw, you know, say you mulled down to five and you drew, you know, four lands and three spells, well, you might get rid of a land, even though you want to have four lands, because you're going to hope to yourself that maybe the land, you know what I mean? It's a matter of looking at your hand. And he's right. You have to look and see what are my top, especially in this meta, especially in Standard. Standard is fast now. It is a fast meta. Either if you're going against red or you're going against cycling, they could have you dead by turn six.
Well, and something else, too, you know, keep in mind, like, certain decks, like, you know, you do your mulligan, and you're like, oh, I'm going to keep these cards. Like, if you have a couple, like, three or four lands in your hand, and one of those lands is, like, a Fabled Passage, you can put that other land on the bottom, and right. or even a card that you want
you're
later,
gonna go find it
and just shuffle it back in, you know, shuffle it right. away. So there's a lot of nuance to it. It's a skill, like you said, that needs to be learned.
And this is where the companions are good. This is what I like about
it. It gives you a free one.
Like I said, like it gives you not just a free one. As if I'm playing against a companion, like I said, I will mull to three, okay, which means I have two cards with Leyline of the Void if I see Loras out there. Now, that doesn't mean they're playing a cycling deck, but the odds are good they're playing a cycling deck. And I'll mull down to drop that Leyline of the Void pre-turn one, hoping that they are just like, sweet.
There's a deck out there that would wreck your day then.
I know.
There's a deck out there because it's here's the thing.
I've never had to mull to three with it.
It plays Yorion as its companion. Yeah. It's a mono red deck.
Oh.
It's a mono red deck. So it has Yorion as a companion, so people are like, oh god, this. So they start thinking a certain way, and then after game one, you side everything out so it's no longer your companion. It's a total troll move, but it works because they're like, oh crap, it's mono red. So you're mulliganing your hand thinking you're playing against like Yori and Luca or something like that. You're like, oh crap, this is mono red. Damn it. You get some free wins that way.
But I mean, I still do that. Well, because like I said, I play a little bit of best of one sometimes because I don't have time for a three. So I'll be like, okay. Ooh, look at that, Luris. Nope. Six. Nope. Five. Ooh, Leyline of the Void. Keep.
Yeah.
And then, you know, cycling.
Yeah.
If they're playing cycling, they usually concede because I've taken your game ender away. It basically, you're going to Drana Stinger me to zero.
Which I think is pretty
and by turn
because,
six.
I mean, you can get a very large fox in a couple
yeah,
of turns.
Yeah, but usually by turn four, I'll have one of the board sweeps usually, because you do have Shatter, you do have or Scatter the Sky.
But I'm just saying they can get a lot of damage in before you Wrath.
They get a lot. You know what? I was down 1-1, and I was 20-1.
That feels good, doesn't it?
Oh god! When I was turn five, I got Luca. I had fires out already. I draw Luca, and I had the Birth of Meletus, like the wall out there, so I put Luca down. Boom, kick out the token, find Agent of Treachery, took one of his big creatures, and then I also had in, then I went ahead and cast Loras, bounced it again.
Oh, Yorion, yeah.
Cast Yorion, took his Loras away.
That's not nice.
and yeah, sweep. And I did, you know, and I had Leyline of the Void out anyway, so he wasn't getting anything in his graveyard.
But you would.
Oh, yes. Although, I was enjoying myself.
Well, no, you play all those enchantments, so you can get those enchantments back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was having a good old That's time cool. with it.
I like it.
So,
I like it.
I love the Jeskai Luka deck. If you haven't played it yet, play it. It's fun. Hell, it's fun.
I have not played it yet. I'm going to have to.
Yeah, it's your style of deck. To tell you the truth, I could see, you know what, maybe we'll do a game where I'll have Jeskai Luka, and you can play whatever you want. Then you'll tell me you want to play it. So, but with that, I mean, that's mulliganing. You know, Aramis and I both, it is a skill. I think you need to do it. Do not be afraid to mulligan. The fact that you can reset your hand, something you can't do in any other game, you know. And sure, there's a penalty, but it's not an unbeatable penalty. And
especially once you know the deck you're playing against, it makes aggressive mulliganing that much better because you're like, all right,
yeah,
I know what I'm
looking
for.
Game two or three. Game two or three in a best of three, you should absolutely be.
Yeah, don't be afraid to mulligan game two and three because you need to find what you need.
Once you know what you're playing against.
Yep.
So, you know, with that, let's go ahead and pivot ourselves to the emails. We did get an email this week.
Nice.
First of all, I want to say congratulations to Mark. I got an email from him today, and he did get his box.
Sweet.
So he's very excited. He's like, the Ikoria box just arrived. I'll tell you what I get when I finish opening it. Thanks again. Hope you're all well, Mark. So, you know, there was that. And then Walter did email us. You know, first of all, Walter's son is home. We're very thankful he gave us an update on his medical stuff. So, you know, I'm not going to go that far. He said, I only have one question, but next week I'll have more. You can have nine for all we care. Walter, you're a patron. You can literally do whatever the hell you want. we'll change the name of the show to Walter's Podcast if you want. No, we won't. But but how did you guys like the new Fortnite festival?
That was one of the events.
It was crazy. Yeah, it was crazy for me. Lost more than I won. But, man, some of the combos I've seen, especially turn one Embercleave to make the guy a 9-9. Okay, so that was the one we were talking about yesterday. Right.
I did not get to play that.
I played it. It was fun-ish. I don't like...
I heard it was very high variance.
I don't like games of chance. And there's not a lot of skill involved. If you're either getting the draw of the big cards that are doing crazy things like a turn one Embercleave, or and we'll raise Forerunner on turn two, or something that gives you a lot of card engine draw, because you only get three cards, no mana, you cast anything in your hand for free, and you can get one of each color mana to cast spells. So you can't mutate half of it, because everything is like two colorless and six, you know, for the really big stuff, but you only get five mana every turn, so I'm not mutating.
Right.
It shut mutate off. Like, if they really wanted us to have fun with it, they should have churned it to 10 mana, or, you know, you get 9 mana or something.
You can
cast because
the first mutate cost.
There's no mana.
Yeah, but you don't need...
You had to pay the mana was an ability, so you had to...
But it's cast. But it's casting the spell. Are you sure? Oh, that's interesting. I wouldn't think that would work that way.
So it was so that part I was kind of like, oh, I want to mutate. So, but I mean, it was fun. It was just a lot of luck. So it was either, if somebody came out turn two or three, I knew I was going to win or lose. And so a game never went much beyond turn four or five for me. And if I was losing, I was just like, oh, here you go. Cause I take no penalty for losing and I've already paid my gold. So what the hell, right. You know, if I'm not going to win, I'm not going to waste my time. I got the five styles and that was all good. You know, Walter's saying it was mostly luck. It's like, especially if you had to draw cards, you could play a ton. Yeah, if you caught the cards that would let you draw a card every time you hit, like it was huge.
Sort of chained off. Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, mutate's an ability. They had cheaper mutate creatures to do that with. I ended up mutating the more expensive ones, you know, a few times. You'd have to mutate the small ones on top of the big ones. So you'd have to cast the big ones for free and then use the smaller mutates. And it was like,
eh. No, you still get the mutate trigger, so.
Yeah, but I want to do the big ones. You know, the whole point is you want to bring a 7-7 on a 1-1.
Yeah, all right? you still get the big one on top.
Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, but you don't get to cast it for one.
No, it's like, yeah.
So, I mean, there was that. So, you know, and he goes on to say he was playing Mono Red Obosh. And saw it on Twitch, was very intrigued. And he was placing another mono red. He started off with three Fervent Champions, a Grim Initiate, and skipping ahead, he had those blocked out with Grim at first to wipe out his Scorchbitter. But at this moment, he had Annex, so Fervent, and just casted Torbern out on me. And I'm like, damn, I'm going to lose. Then he proceeds to rope him. So next turn, he tries to go all out on me, and I'm like, he has Embercleave. I block his Fervent with my Bone Crusher and block with my three Fervent Champions and a Grim Initiate and kills his Torbern. And because of First Strike, I kept my stuff, so I'm like, hell, you might have a chance. And, next turn, he pulls out another Torbern. So again, same out, comes block, Torbern killed it. Next turn, guess what? Another Torbern, but this time he didn't cast it. And he swings with his Annex. I killed it. And then as I had him dead to rights next turn with me casting Obosh, guess what he did? Quit. That was the best game I've played. It sounds like it was a lot of fun. I do enjoy that.
Sounds like
that.
A typical arena player.
Yeah. Well, that really annoys me. And here's the thing. You can report them for that. If it looks like you're winning, you can report them. You can go to the website and do it. I wish they had a way to do it in-game.
Yeah. There's not.
For me, what I love doing with that is I've played a lot of Mono Red, and they come against my Jeskai Lucca now because Arena's figured out how to counter-program the Lucca deck a bit. So, again, Fervent Champion. Or not Fervent Champion. Leyline of the Void. Sure, bring Annex out. No problem. But you're not getting your 1-1.
Yeah, no death trigger.
No death trigger for you. Usually after that happens, they squeak. So, again, Leyline of the Void is a beautiful card. So,
rotates out in a couple of months.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be sad again. I mean, I remember when the Leylines came in last year, and I was just like...
I'm surprised they didn't have more of an impact.
I think Void did. I think the others didn't. I really thought Leyline of the Sanctity was going to be something. But again, these aren't spell-heavy decks anymore. You're doing a lot of creatures.
Yeah.
You know, Hexproof doesn't buy you a ton. So, but, you know, so that was our mail. You guys can email us. We'll talk about that at the end on how to get to us. Again, Mark, congratulations on that, dude. We're very glad you did it and you won. And we're not going to do our iTunes drawing. I'll just draw. I think I'm just going to draw two in June at this point. I don't know. Are we going to record Tuesday next week, or are we going to try to record on Memorial Day? I don't think we're going to try to record on Memorial Day. We can.
I don't know. I don't know yet.
Yeah, because next week's Memorial Day.
Yeah, I don't know yet.
Because I don't have kids, so I can record at any point. So we're not sure yet what's going on with that. But with that, I guess we might as well. I mean, unless there's anything else you want to hit on. All right, so as Aramis and I are sitting here, we're putting our cards back in their boxes. We're rolling off the play mats. We're taking the pizza boxes over the trash because, damn it, your mother still does not work here, so don't be a loser. And we want to remind you that we both stream Arena on the Plains Talker podcast channel on Twitch. You can actually also catch this show now on Twitch. Look up Plains Talker podcast there. You can also follow me on Twitch at Mindcrime73, although I tend to play, if I'm playing, I'm playing on Plains Talkers. So.
Yeah, and whenever I stream, which I don't know when that's going to be again, it also simulcasts on the Plains Talkers podcast channel. But if you want to follow my channel individually, it's RMECWRX on Twitch. And if Twitter is more your speed and you want to keep up with the show that way, you can find us at Plains Talker Pod on Twitter.
And my personal Twitter is at WR Benson. No, I'm not on it very much. Really, I'm there just to follow the great musical career of the lovely David Hasselhoff. But, you know, it's really the only reason I have it. But, of course, you can always look for me there. It's at WR Benson. And, of course, you should and always follow us on Facebook. It's a very active community. It's becoming more active as the days are going on. Just go to Facebook.com/Plainstalker, not Plainstalkers. We took that last S off for savings and because some asshole beat us to the knee. So like and follow our page there, and you can catch our show there and be able to comment with us.
And finally, you can send us emails and even ask for advice in our Ask Aramis section, where I can offer you tips on anything from deck construction to limited choices. And if you want to send us an email, our address is podcast@plainstalkerspodcast.com.
And I really want to remind you guys, I do host another podcast. It deals with the television show DC's Legends of Tomorrow. It's called Legends TV Talk. I got three more episodes this season, and then we'll be off for a while. We record there for Sunday nights. If you're interested, you can find me on Facebook there at Legends TV Talk. Don't forget about our iTunes review contest. Like I said, in June, at the start of June, I'll draw two names. If you put in a review, we will, you know, read it on the show. We like the 5 stars. Please do the 5 stars. It does help. The show is getting more eyes. It is growing, so it is helpful. We really do appreciate it. You can do that through iTunes on your computer if you don't have an iOS device. But if you leave us a review there, we'll leave it on the show. And every month we do a drawing to win some arena packs. So very much appreciate any reviews you can give us there. So we really do appreciate you guys doing that. But on that note, we want to say thank you again for hanging out with us tonight. We had a great time. We'll be back maybe next Monday, if not maybe next Tuesday. I don't think we're going to take the week off, but we'll let you guys know. You can follow us on the Plains Talker page. We also might be streaming this Wednesday. We might try to play a paper match again. So, but just watch our page there. But for Aramis Perez, this is Will Benson saying thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. Thank you for hanging out with us. And we want to remind you to always leave some of your mana untapped, because you never know when you need it. Take care and have a great day. Bye-bye now.